All right, I'm going to get started. I'm really excited to be here today. Okay, thank you. Hello, there's one more presentation.
Go ahead.
Put a plug in for me.
I am so sorry.
Oh, it's no worries. Today, I'm Mike Miller, and today I'm going to talk about microalgae and soil health. Particularly, I'm going to talk about a couple of microalgae products developed by our company, Helier. Just recently, about 5 or 6 months ago, we decided to start looking at potential soil health benefits of our microalgae products. And so this is really very hot off the press. Looking at soil health indicators is really new to us, and we're developing the tools. So it was really great to hear all the work that's being done by the USDA. We've certainly gone to the USDA sites to learn some of these assays, Cornell universities and others. So this picture here is a picture of our microalgae production plant outside of Phoenix, Arizona, in a suburb called Gilbert. So why are we interested in microalgae and developing microalgae products for agriculture? Well, microalgae is a common component of soils, of healthy soils. And in fact, the products that I'm going to talk about, the microalgae strains that we use in these products, were bioprospected from soils in Arizona. So I'll tell you a little bit about Helier first. Helier is a private company. We're funded primarily by some members of the Mars family, so like the candy family, and they're into pet foods and other things, other agricultural ventures. And really their vision is to unlock the potential of microalgae to deliver products and solutions that sustain and improve life. So we really, kind of behind our technologies at Helier, are collections of microalgae strains. We have thousands of microalgae strains that have been collected and bioprospected through environments throughout the world. We are a vertically integrated company. We take these algae strains, and we have an algae development group that can modify through mutation algae to deliver, to produce different constituents and different amounts in the algae strains, and also to grow the algae in ways to generate more of certain constituents and less of others, so we can really manipulate the growth of algae, microalgae, really well. We also have a really world-class kind of production facility where we can scale up our processes and produce really large volumes of microalgae. And in terms of the agricultural products, we have a greenhouse screening program where we can identify microalgae strains and combinations that elicit responses that are valuable for agriculture. The greenhouse screening stage is followed up by a field testing phase, and where we have trials. We've probably done, in the last 2 years that I've been at Helier, probably about 70 trials throughout the mostly the U.S. We have some products. We have the first product is called True Asta, and that's at the bottom right. And that's an astaxanthin product produced by a red algae, and it's really high in antioxidants, and it's sold as a dietary supplement for human nutrition. We have a high omega-3 producing algae strain that we use in an aquaculture product to provide omega-3 fatty acids to aquaculture environments. And then we also have two agriculture products. The first is Phycoterra, and the second is an OMRI-certified version of Phycoterra called Terrine, and I'll talk about a little bit about those in the next slide. So our product is it's marketed as a soil amendment. And one of the things, some common misconceptions when people think about microalgae is they think of seaweed. We're not seaweed, that's a macroalgae, and we're not an extract product like a lot of the seaweed products are. We're an inactivated whole microcell product, so the microalgae are intact, but they're not alive. The products come in a liquid form, and some of the common application methods is through drip irrigation, in seed furrow, side dressing, and we've done some work recently with pivot applications. The application volumes are pretty low, 1 quart to 1 gallon depending on the purpose. And over the last couple of years, we really focused on screening lots of crops, lots of locations around the country to find where we see benefits. And some of the benefits we see are in that list over on the left. They're not in all crops, but those are some of the trends we've seen across the different crops that we've worked with. Recently, we saw some really interesting things where we're having effects on shelf life and even the flavor of strawberries post-application. So we've looked at berry crops, vegetable crops, different row crops, and so now what we're doing is going forward, we're focusing on a few key crops to build a really strong case for, you know, how to use it and the benefits. And as we were doing this, about 5 months ago, we decided that, you know, we should start looking at soil health. We're a small group, so we can't do everything, but we got around to finally testing soil health because, you know, microalgae are a part of soil. And so this is really new stuff for us. And so I'm really glad to be here with a lot of experts. You guys might have ideas for us going forward also. So over the last 5 months, we've developed a pretty good toolbox of different soil health assays. You know, looking primarily focusing on biological and physical. I'm not going to talk about all the work that we've done, but I'm just going to highlight some really interesting cases that we've seen through our work and some of our field trials, the ones that are checked there on the right over the next few slides. So these are just really the beginnings of our soil health testing, and these are examples, and all of these will be followed up with additional field trials and testing at many locations and many different soil types. But it just gives you a little bit of a flavor of some of the things we're seeing. So we have an alfalfa trial going on in Gilbert, Arizona. And we decided that we wanted to, after a couple applications, we went in and looked at the distribution of soil aggregation size. So this really was not the aggregation stability. As we go forward with this trial over the next year, we also want to look at wet aggregate stability. But the first test we did was just looking at the soil aggregate distribution. So the bottom left graph there shows the percent mass retained in 1 millimeter to 2 millimeter sieves after two applications. So this is 15 days after the second application. And with our Terrine product, we saw a significant increase and shift in terms of the soil aggregation distribution in that larger direction. On the flip side, in the graph on the right, you can see that we looked at the, this is what was left over in the pan after going through the 0.25 millimeter sieve. So these are really small fine grains. And we saw a significant decrease in the fine grain structure of the soils treated with our organic product, in this case Terrine. The pictures on the right are just some examples, demonstration to show that this is each tube has the equivalent mass. The tube on the right is our untreated control. The tube on the left is the Terrine, and we're getting some larger aggregates in the Terrine treatment. So our next step with this, over the next year, we're going to continue to apply on this field. It's in year-round production, as we want to look at over time if it affects the wet aggregate stability. So we also had a bell pepper trial in Yuma, Arizona, in a silt loam soil. And this trial, we had 4 applications of the product Ficoterra, so our conventional product, during the course of the growing season. At the end of the growing season, at final harvest, we took soil samples from around the plots, and we saw really a dramatic increase in the water holding capacity of the soil. So this is something that really just jumped out at us. This is something in a place like Yuma, Arizona, is really important. So this is our first kind of look at this, and we were really excited. And as we go forward now, for every field trial we have at each location, we're looking at the soil water holding capacity to see if we see trends across soils and locations going forward, and and to better characterize what the potential benefit, broader benefit of this might be. So we do a lot of testing in really poor quality soils in Arizona and some in California too. We did some sweet corn, snap pea, and snap bean trials in Painesville, Minnesota. So this was a much richer Esterville sandy loam soil. And we wanted to look and see, are we having any effects on the soil microbe growth? And so we screened a number of different soil microbe genera, and we saw some really pretty significant increases in the relative abundance of the soil microbes. And the left side of the graph shows the untreated control. The right side is our Phycoterra products, our conventional product. And we're seeing, and this is just an example of three genera, Bacillus, Gaiales, and Nitrospira, where we're seeing significant increases in the abundance of the soil microbes. We've also done, I don't have it here, but we've looked at like soil respiration in some of these studies too. Okay, I've got 5 minutes. I should get an extra minute for being late.
No,
I have to get everyone.
I've incorporated that.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, then next in that, this is in a Santa Maria organic strawberry trial we have going on in California right now. So this is all hot off the press stuff for us. It's in a really sandy soil. And we looked at the citrate extractable, or autoclave citrate extractable protein in this trial. The control is the black line. The terrine, this is our OMRI product, is the blue line. And it's not significantly different, but we are seeing kind of numerically enhancements in this sandy soil, which is really encouraging for us. And so this is something that we're excited about and looking at in other soils also. We looked at the runoff. We looked at the suspended solids in the runoff. This is from the alfalfa field near us in Gilbert, Arizona, from that trial. And this is a sandy loam soil. The black line on the top is the control. The blue line is our terrine, our OMRI product. And the y-axis there is the soil grain, or the fine particles, suspended particles in the runoff. So we saw a significant reduction in the runoff of fine grains. The two tubes down at the bottom are just an illustration of some of the suspended solids when we centrifuged them down, and you can see that definitely in the terrine treatment there was less in the runoff. We've also looked at dissolved solids in runoff, and this is an Oxnard, California trial. This is with terrine, but it was a conventional trial, but we used our terrine product. And in terms of the dissolved solids, in a really heavy clay soil, we saw significant, large decreases in the dissolved solids in the runoff. The picture down at the lower right is just showing the runoff from the experiment we did, and the UTCs on the left and terrines on the right. So, in summary, this is really kind of just the beginning for us, and we're just kind of learning how to do these assays and trying to find the most appropriate assays. But we do think that from what we've seen so far, that there could be some significant impacts of microalgae products on soil health. Primarily, we've looked at the physical and biological. I think that there could be some potential that microalgae could be used not only as a tool to increase crop productivity and quality, but to decrease runoff. The other key is that as we've done this, we've really decided that soil health is just going to be an integral part of whatever we do. In every trial that we do over the country, we're going to be looking at soil health indicators also. And we've only just begun with this, so over the years, we really hope to generate some really meaningful data across many locations and soil types that helps support the role of microalgae in soil health. And I just wanted to acknowledge Braden and Su Ting there did most of the work that I talked about in these slides.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Are there any questions?
Okay.
I'm glad you got
sometime the last speaker, you can.
Oh, I have a simple question. You said it influenced the flavor. Is it an improvement or not?
Yeah, it's an improvement.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a we had a university study with, we had 80 sensory kind of people. It was like a consumer survey. We're also doing trained panel and consumer surveys for the California trials that we have going on right now.
Okay, thank you. Mm.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. I'm wondering, do algae occur quite frequently on living plant surfaces? Also, do algae occur as endophytes in living plants, just as bacteria and fungi do?
I don't know about the endophytes. But that would be interesting to like explore that more. You do get some algae that can grow on plants, and we've done just some testing of that. And
do they have a measurable effect on plants when they're present versus not?
I don't know.
I don't think they're not a dominant influence on plants. If they're there, they're pretty minor. But in these type of environments, you have blue-green algae crusts on the soil surface that are incredibly important in the dry sandy soils.
Yeah, and this is not a blue-green or cyanobacteria. This is actually an algae,
okay.
A photosynthetic algae.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Do you have any information about the physical and the chemical properties of your product?
Yeah.
But you cannot show anything.
Yeah.
15 minutes.
And that's, it's 15 minutes. We always, continually analyze our products. And basically in algae, there's all kinds of lipids. There's all kinds of carbohydrates. There's different, oils and lots of different compounds and stuff that could have effects on plants. And but it's not a nutritional effect that we see because we're adding it at really low levels. So we think that there's something in there that's just having some type of a biostimulatory role for the plants. And then also as a secondary, another effect, we're really having some stimulation effect in the soil.
What is application rate around on your hand? You say very low level.
Yeah, anywhere from one quart to about a gallon per acre for application.
You had a question.
We're kind of hypothesizing that it's that the aggregate structure, it's really changing the aggregate structure to hold more water and take more water in.
So were you measuring the available water holding capacity or plant available water?
Just available water holding capacity, but that we have not looked at the plant available.
Okay.
Well, I think, and it's a good question. It's a complicated question. And the way that we're kind of going about this is we're really doing a lot of work to understand what are the actives in these microalgae. And then once we understand that, then we're going to control the growth in ways to try to help us optimize. Because we want to avoid this, we want to create a stable product that gives reproducible results, and that's really a strong focus of that behind this, and that work is in progress.